This is Greg Farrow. Today I wanted to talk with some friends about the state of the SDN market, and particularly about vendor, how many vendors do we need in the marketplace? Now, following a Twitter discussion with Mike Fratto during the week, and which Florian Otell, and I'll introduce them in a minute, is saying that when were we going to see all the vendors disappear and just one or two SDN vendors survive? And I have a view that they probably won't. I think that we'll have a lot of them. And Florian piped up and said, why would they compress? So what I thought we'd do is very quickly get these people on the phone, talk through the topic, and just throw some wild ideas around. This is completely unprepared. We don't have anything. So first of all, Mike Fratto, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. It's Mike Fratto, Principal Analyst for Current Analysis. And I cover everything networking in the enterprise, wireless, wired, SDN, data center, all that stuff.
You sound like a...
Happy to be here.
You sound like a professional engineer who covers all the same stuff.
I used to be.
And also with us today is Florian Otell. Florian, tell people a bit about yourself.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me. Hi, everybody. My name is Florian Otell. I am with Red Hat currently and focus on OpenStack as a technical specialist, as they call it. My focus area is SDN and NFV. And prior to Red Hat, I was with HP Converged Cloud business unit, it's called nowadays, and prior to that with a HP public cloud, right? So perfect. One of the few organizations out there doing OpenStack at hyperscale.
Okay, so let me kick off the conversation by saying today in the market we have an awful lot of vendors. We have, you know, any number of startups working on the white box space doing, and then there's a number of vendors. In that sort of space you have your big switches, your Pika 8s, your Pluribuses, and so forth, and then you have what I call the software-only SDN vendors, which is companies like Metacura and many others. You've got various acceleration vendors in the space like Netronome and Corsa Networks, who are providing very specific ones. Netronome is doing accelerated networking adapters using high-speed NXPs, and you have Corsa Networks doing FPGAs and switches so that you can get high-speed OpenFlow capabilities. All the way across to the right-hand side where you have VMware and NSX having a lovely little bitch fest with each other about who's got a real solution or not, and then pretending that we've got some sort of theology around each of their radical solutions. So first of all, Mike, your opening comment was, when are we going to see vendor consolidation? Tell me why you think we should see vendor consolidation.
Well, because right now, by my count, there's at least 25 vendors. There's probably a few more. In fact, you mentioned a couple that I might throw in there. In the marketplace, and that's way too many. A lot of them are startups. So all the incumbent, sort of the established networking hardware vendors have an SDN solution, either one that they built their own, or they're going to base it on Open Daylight, or they're going to base it off of ONF. And then there's all the startups that come along. And just historically, pretty much every aspect of IT, when you get this sort of influx of all these startups, eventually there's consolidation. There's either through acquisition or, you know, they just disappear or they pivot at some point into something else. So that was sort of the impetus for the question.
Okay, so my response is based on the logic that that's true 10 years ago when we had scarce resources. So 10 years ago, the ability to make a silicon chip and then turn that into a networking thing was the key requirement, right? And only certain large companies were able to do that. So Cisco, you know, Wellfleet, Bay Networks, and all those companies, 3Com, they were the only companies who could afford to make the investment in the switch or the silicon or the custom IP. And so if you were first to market, then you tended to win all the market because you started to make profits and recover your costs. I would posit that we are moving to a post-scarcity economy in networking and in computing more generally. And by that I mean silicon is available from a number of different vendors. Software is relatively, you know, is orders of magnitude less complicated to do today than it was in 1990. You know, running a very large software project has been proven to be very simple because Google and Amazon and Facebook are proving it every day of the week. And we are now in a situation where bandwidth is plentiful. We're now in a situation where power supplies are reliable. You know, we now live in a post-scarcity economy, and there's actually no need for us to converge on just one or two vendors unless somebody can out-compete the other, and I don't see that happening today.
So my take on this is, let me say that I somewhat agree in the sense that the barrier to entry in that space are much lower today, right? And zooming out, I see that as definitely a good move. However, what I do not agree is that we are in a everything is plentiful. What we just, as everything with bottlenecks, we just move the bottleneck somewhere else. And if I, from what I see, basically the bottleneck moves to customer attention span and the amount of time different prospects can spend with one technology or the other, right? There's only so many vendors you can change three times a day with your, within your environment until you get sick of it and you basically suddenly call me back when you're mature enough. I mean, you have to be this high to get into the building, right? So yes, in terms of knocking up a technology solution, yes, the barrier to entry are much lower today. And I see, again, a very, very good sign, very positive development. However, I don't see that as necessary a sign of longevity, right? And in that, in the long run, I would actually agree with Mike that eventually things will consolidate. But again, definitely the because the barrier to entry are much lower, we will see a much more dynamic space with much more, much higher rate of attrition and different entries coming and going and consolidation and so on, right? With the corresponding load on customers keeping track of all that.
But I, so here's my, so you identify, of course, that the silicon moat has disappeared. So that barrier to entry to competing in networking used to be a silicon moat. You had to get a piece of silicon to cross the moat to be inside the castle. But what's also happening is that the big vendors are leaving an awful lot of profit on the table. So, for example, Cisco makes somewhere, you know, is averaging 60% GP, but in the core networking, it's making north of 80% gross margin. So if you're a startup and you're running at 40% margin, you can be quite profitable and quite long sustaining at 40% margin. So if you look at somebody like, say, the big switches and the Midacuras, they only need a couple of $100 million a year to be a good, successful, viable businesses because their costs are low.
Again, completely agree with you. And as I said, I'd see definitely as a positive sign with much more dynamic market than the ossified stuff that we had 10 years ago. Again, very, very good signs all around, and the margin will go down. Again, it's a traditional low-end disruption dynamic at play. However, right, especially if you see conservative customers, and I'm not naming names, right? I'm being on both sides of the table, so to not name names, but as an incumbent, you basically put your warm arms around the customers. We take good care of you. We will take good care of you in the future, right? I mean, that sort of stuff. And again, there are some customers which, and I've seen one just the other week and said, listen, we're just at that place in a space and time where for us, it's a good thing to be a follower. We just, we have so many, so much bandwidth and appetite for trying new stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, definitely. The margin will definitely see the margins eroding, much more dynamic space and much more exciting technologies. However, the big incumbents do have large amounts of batteries, right? And they can run on those batteries for quite some time.
No. So one of the challenges that you have if you're a big incumbent like HP and Cisco and so forth is that your share price is determined by your profit margins. And if those batteries are already exhausted. So the last 5 years of the downturn in the economy has seen a lot of those profits under fire. And if though it continues on much longer, their share price will get hammered. And that has a whole lot of systemic ramifications to those businesses. I would disagree with your battery statement because they've been running on batteries for 5 years anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Yes, okay. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I mean, you're right. The big public companies have to worry about, you know, Wall Street and keeping the street happy and you know, shareholder equity and all of that good stuff. But, you know, for most of the networking vendors, you know, their networking portfolio is relatively small of their overall income. You know, the thing that I see with SDN. And in particular, and all of the SDN vendors is in the enterprise. The challenge for the startups, if they're going to go after the enterprise market in a big way and challenge any of the incumbents, is they don't have the channel. And if you don't have the channel, you don't have access to the customers to make to the wide variety of purchasing customers in order to make those sales. And so, okay. Yeah, they can get into service providers because they're not channel driven. they can get into some of the financials because they're not entirely channel driven. But for the most part, if they can't get into that channel space, you know, it's going to be a very tough way to really expand and to really become a threat to the big incumbent hardware vendors.
Okay, let me give you the counter argument to that, right?
Okay.
10 years ago, there was no internet. So the only way that you got to engage with a vendor was through a sales rep. And so the big vendors put a lot of money and effort into building salespeople on the ground. Now, even though there are resellers selling the product, the vendors themselves still have a lot of salespeople covering the ground. Mm-hmm. But what we also have today is the internet, and people are increasingly turning to forums, social media, blogs, you know, this type of conversation to research their products and to get their knowledge, and not showing up to the vendor until they've actually made some form of mental commitment. So they don't call in. My surveying data, so the data I'm seeing from surveys that I'm conducting in the quiet, is that people no longer trust their sales manager. In 10 years ago, we used to say, let's get John from Cisco in and come and tell me what I need to buy to make my network thing. And then we'd trust him to give us a good solution. But today, when your EMC account manager turns up on your doorstep in the last week of every quarter, and he has done for the last 4 years, you're starting to realize that you're just a way for him to make his numbers. He's not your buddy. He's not your friend. He's there to make a profit out of you, and you no longer trust him. So the internet is replacing that, you know, I need the vendor thing, because you don't. You can get all the knowledge you need and the training you need from the internet or from other forms, and that's changing the dynamic. You don't need the vendor anymore. You just need a working product.
Yeah. So what I would agree is that Casper is much more educated today, and actually, believe it or not, I see that as a very, very good sign. And actually, it's a fresh breath of air, and it's actually quite a pleasure when you go into a customer and says, we've done our homework, this is where we are, right? Mm-hmm. And they have a very crisp understanding where they are technologically, don't get me wrong, right?
Yeah.
But there are those with the introspect that said, listen, we know that, we do the homework, we read the papers, we read the blogs, that's fine, right? Mm-hmm. However, in terms of technology adoptions, especially large enterprises, right? They are aware of the mountain they need to move, right? And they can only move at that certain speed, right? So being educated is one thing, but being aware of the realities of what the task at hand is and the size of the task at hand is a totally different environment, right? And that, so because of that inertia, right, that the speed differential between where they are and how fast they can move to how much the incumbent can do becomes smaller. But let me do this, right? I mean, it seems that we start going into go-to-market and so on. But let me go back to to where we started, right? In terms of a number of vendors and so on. What I would like to see is that I would like to see a much more crisper understanding in terms of what the use cases are and what we do with this thing, right? And this is actually going back to the Twitter dialogue we had. It was about, okay, orchestration in a telco space, right? So, for example, telco space, right? They're going, actually, believe it or not, from what I've seen, they're going down the stack. They're going into PCI device, pass-through, OVS optimization, and so on, right? In a total different environment. SDN is just nowhere on the map. As soon as you ask them the SDN question, especially if they're telco part of the service provider, not the carrier part of telco providers, right? Mm. They still tell you, they still talk about octets, for God's sake, right?
We're a long way ahead of the market here with this discussion, right? Four or 5 years maybe? But it's still, you know, it's worth talking about because these are things that, you know, well, we care about them. That's why we're talking about it.
Yeah. But put it this way, getting back to to what we're saying, right? So a number of vendors, right? Okay, so we're ahead of the market. So if you are, if the ramp up period is much lower than one could wish, right? How much can you sustain that as your new income or startup that need to show, prove yourself, get traction fast, right? So that's the balance, right? So I see, unfortunately, yes, there is a lot of buzz and so on. In terms of actual demand and people actually doing business useful thing with SDN, the reality is much, much meager than the hype would suggest, right? Mm-hmm. So it means that because the rate of adoption is much, as always, right, much slower than one would think, right? On the other hand, it gives you the new startups, they will need much bigger war chests to weather that slow startup, and on the other hand, gives the incumbent some time to, well, knock something up, right? Just, well, wash their Salesforce, do some sort of stuff that gets sure. there and so on, right? So
yeah.
I see it's, it all goes down to business drivers and actual use case, right? Mm. And then from when it all falls down from there. Right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What you're saying is customers want one big, easy-to-use, trusted partner to do stuff, yep. right? And they will go and find that partner and pick the one and then stick with them through thick and thin because that's the only
way. Easier. It's easier for them. It makes their life much easier, right? And again, if
so here's my point, right? If that was true, then Amazon wouldn't exist because customers wouldn't change and go and move to Amazon, where they're then responsible for everything about their app. So if you want to tell me that customers aren't willing to change those practices, like...
No, I'm not. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that things are not changing, but let's, and again, I don't want to pick on the Amazon, right? Because it's still, 1996 when they started, and how long time did they take for AWS to pick up, right? So the whole point is that the ramp up is slower than we think. That doesn't necessarily think that things are not moving. And again, things are moving for the better, definitely. And I'm looking forward for more change, right? And if anything, we are in this industry.
More change. So the survey data shows that 10% of the market is willing to move to AWS or Google Compute or some form of SaaS or PaaS solution, right? Now, 10% isn't much, but considering that SaaS or PaaS didn't exist 12 months ago, that's an astonishing number of people who are seriously looking at changing that. So your statement to me, where you say people will only go with companies that they know or they trust, is provably non-true. Customers will change provided the value equation is there. So, for example, I just did a capital analysis on white box networking equipment, right? Today, if you spend $1 million on a proprietary networking solution with the maintenance contracts and some bits and pieces, over 5 years, you'll spend $3 million on that piece of kit. So by the time you buy $1 million, spend 20% per year on maintenance, do some minor upgrades, et cetera, you'll spend $3 million. But if you go and buy white box, you'll spend less than $1.5 million over the same period. That's a lot of money to be saved. And if you're going to give something up, and I'm going to give you $1.5 million of dollars back, not even calculating net present value over time, that's an awful lot of money. I can forgive an awful lot of stuff if I don't have $1.5 million.
So, Greg, it's not necessarily I agree or disagree, right? So, and it's not black and white. What I'm saying, it's shades of gray there, right? So, and believe it or not, actually, ironically enough, I'm making this very argument, right? Hmm. When I'm talking with, especially people in the service world, in the telco space, people doing Etsy and a VPOC. I mean, that's exactly the argument I'm making on a daily basis, right? In other words, dear Mr. Customer, you paid $750K for this box. How about this to you unit that's cost literally a tenth of the price that has very respectable performance. That's what you need, right? Again, very compelling value proposition. So again, I completely agree with you, right?
Yeah.
But saying what I'm not doing is just I'm not underestimating the size of a task.
I'm not saying is everybody in the market suddenly going to go here. I actually think it's going to be, but there is so much money on the table to be saved by using SDN white box or using one or the other or both, right? Some people might just say, I'm going to use my existing equipment, but I'm going to put a third-party SDN software provider over the top. It's not just, 10% better or 5% better. It's not, 10% faster to provision stuff. We're talking orders of magnitude in difference. We're talking about reducing a network spend from $3 million from like today, your first purchase in a big data center is your big fat chassis, right? Which is probably going to cost you $750,000 for a pair. Well, you can go and buy a couple of 1IU pizza boxes and build a starting point in an ECMP design that'll scale horizontally and spend less than $50,000. There's a big difference between $1 million and $50,000, and you can forgive an awful lot of accidents for that sort of money, right? That's like several days of outage for some companies. To lose $1 million,
right? And if you look at what some of the incumbent vendors are doing is they're recognizing that change in architecture. So they're still offering chassis, but they're moving to bigger, fatter, top of rack, end of row, going to a two tier architecture. So I mean, they're moving there because there is the cost savings, but there's more to there's what I'd like to see. I think in your scenario, the only way that a lot of these SDN startups survive on their own without getting acquired, the only way they survive is either they pivot to something else at some point, or they start making inroads with the channel so that they can provide an alternative to, you know, an incumbent networking vendor with a hypervisor. Okay. Or the hypervisor.
You guys have an awful lot of faith in the channel, because I don't think the channel's making enough money to survive. And nor do they have the capability.
Actually, I agree with you. So let me get back to what we agreed earlier, that the barrier to entry are thankfully much lower today. And also, what I would definitely agree is that the design paradigms, and again, sorry for the wooden tongue, but definitely the design patterns that we see in place are changing. For a big fat box, dimension for a peak is changing through just start small, scale out dimension, and then build up from there. So design patterns are changing. The barrier to entry are changing. People are more risk prone than they were, right? So these definitely are trends. What I would like to see is that being accelerated, right? And to me, I would very much like to see much a crisper understanding of the business case and the pushing for those particular design patterns, right? Which means that for new entrants, new thinking, right? Yeah. And things are changing. There are people are taking risks, and believe me, I had with the bank, and the kind of think about is
I'm
just mind-boggling.
I'm very heartened by Deutsche Telekom and their particular, you know, those people who are close enough have heard what Deutsche Telekom is doing in terms of research. But Mike, do you really think that resellers are going to survive the coming apocalypse?
I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, but I think they're the ones that are leaving money on the table, because with the way the resellers pay their employees and the way that they're paid is basically on units shipped. And yet there's a whole lot more upside to providing professional services. And so if a reseller were to take on one of the startups and provide wrap that around professional services and support and all of that stuff, then these startup SEM vendors, they have a really good shot of getting their foot into the door, because it's all about getting in front of the customer and then having all of those components in place. And the VARs already have that relationship. They're just not exploiting it very well.
But running professional services is hard and expensive,
yes,
and easy to make mistakes. Like, you can literally lose one deal and all of a sudden you're 40% overstocked on engineering resources if you're a reseller.
So let me say with Greg on this one, and say this one, let me put it in a different way. So right up front, I think I'm with Greg on this one. And the reason for that is that the traditional value chain that you had with reseller, distributors, and so on and so forth, I mean, they were literally based around the box pushing mentality, right? However, to Greg's point, right, customers are much more educated. It's the value chains are much, much shorter, because people, of course, disintermediate, they go directly to their source, right? Usually, more often than not, it's actually pretty funny, go directly to the upstream developers, right? Because they know where their golden eggs are coming.
The internet changes all of this, because now
the
customer can go straight to the internet and get directly to the vendor,
exactly,
or directly to some other resource that can help them solve the problem. Why would I need a reseller? The reseller used to be the intermediate person who had special blessed access to vendor resources. You know what? Resellers don't have any more capability to access resources any more than the customer does from a vendor.
Completely agree. And again, so the value, to put it in pretentious terms, I see that the value chain's much shorter and actually not yet stable, right? So people are struggling. Okay, how do I do this? Do I provide value add? What kind of value provide? To your point, professional services and expert help, it's really, really hard. And you have to be one step ahead of customer, which is especially educated one. It's not an easy task, right? And then when you show up there as an intermediate, it's like, why are you here? I mean, what can you do for me, right? That's a very tough question.
Sure. Mike?
Yes.
Well, I mean, does that change your view?
No, I mean, it's definitely, I'm not saying VARs are perfect and that they don't have challenges in front of them. And yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say that they don't add any value. Yeah, the customer has a lot more access to resources to research and to find out what, you know, to research problems and solutions and look at what is available and at least get some of that information. But I can tell you, looking at all the vendor sites, a lot of them, yeah, there's a lot of variation between the amount of detail you can get and really to understand it, you have to go through that kind of engagement. But I do think that there is value by the VARs that they are not exploiting particularly well. And I would love to see a big national VAR take on one of these startups as a marquee partner and you know, push it through. Because I think that's going to get – it's all about getting in the door, right? So.
Okay. I'm not sure. I think resellers are sort of on a road to collapse. I think while they I see your point of view, Mike, which is they do add value in certain circumstances, but unless they get 100% market coverage, that what I mean by that is that they get some companies where they make easy money, which subsidizes the hard money. As soon as you take away the easy money, because it's easy for people like me who work for customers to just go and get what I need off the internet, their whole business model collapses.
Yeah.
And I've seen the numbers, and I know, I mean, I was watching, in particular in the UK, a lot of the resellers are collapsing down to mega vendors. So I've watched 5 medium-sized converge into 1 mega player, and then you look back further and you realize all the mega players collapse usually within about 4 years of becoming mega players. They just all go broke. They just physically cannot keep themselves well organized, train their engineers, manage their resources, and stay profitable. It's just, I mean, how many resellers are out there, except for, say, the odd few like Dimension Data, that are still in business 10 years after you've seen them?
So I don't have such a equally apocalyptic view as you, Greg, but definitely I see that it's much, much harder to make money in this space, right? So their day-to-day lives are increasingly harder, right? Which, again, we need to tighten up the belt significantly. And again, that might be a bit too much for many of those.
This comes back down to your knock-on effect. As you say, profit margins are going to shrink. Well, if profit margins shrink, resellers' profit margins are going to shrink. Well, then they're going to go out of business. Well, okay, that doesn't work. Well, vendor profit margins have to shrink, but reseller margins have to rise. That's never going to happen.
No. Exactly.
I don't know what you think, but you know, customers are going to pay more for professional services. I mean, they're already paying $3,000 a day for something that costs them less than $300 a day to employ internally. Does that make sense anymore?
Well, so let me put it this way, right? So getting back to what we said, at least at this maturity stage of the technology, right? And to your point, Greg, I mean, Gordon, it takes 1/10 of the price, so we can take a day of outage of 2, right? At this stage of the technology maturity, there is, for the time being, a value to be gained from actually providing expert help in making the wheels spin, right? Because again, there's many, many little wheels that you have to keep in together, and maybe you don't have or you don't need the competence in house to keep track of 20 different Git repos to take all your stuff going, right? You just don't want or have that. So there is money to be made with that expertise. But again, that's very, very fast moving, and it's very, very hard to keep track of that. All right, so again, professionals, there are money to be made in professional services at this stage.
Well, this conversation's gone in a completely different track. So will SDN vendors survive? We don't know. Summary?
I mean,
Florian, last words?
Yes, they will, but much fewer than we see today in the long run.
But not just a couple?
No, not just a couple, no.
Mike?
Well, I never actually said a couple, but no, I think we're going to see some consolidation. And I think we're going to see consolidation, either acquisition or companies pivoting away to something else or just going broke and doing something else.
Yeah.
Not sure when.
I don't see that. I mean, the lesson I learned recently was I was looking at Pluribus, who is a true SDN player. But you know what? They're not selling to networking people. They're selling to a completely different market today. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't attract the networking market. They certainly can. But there's more ways to sell networking equipment than to just networking people. You can sell them to application providers. Look at what Coho Data is doing with networking in their storage engines. I think the market's far more diverse than we understand. It's no longer, and we didn't even touch on things like OpenStack and OpenDaylight and their ability to apply abstraction. And yeah. you'll start to see networking companies that actually exist above the OpenStack waterline.
Now that, and there's a lot of upside
yeah.
right there, a lot of potential.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think definitely. Networking is going to be – I think networking is going to shrink because a lot of what we do think of as networking is going to become above OpenStack and or above mm-hmm. Open Daylight in the long run, and that's where it'll be. And I don't
and I'm not going to even touch that because that's a two-hour rant in and by itself.
Well, on that note, we'll just wrap it up. I think thanks very much to Mike Fratto for joining us today.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. And Florian.
And thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, and I'll look forward to just meeting you on Packet Pushers. If you're listening to this, this is just a casual conversation I just wanted to record. I'd love to hear your feedback about it. Just to see if you've got any comments or suggestions, please do sound off in the comments at the bottom of this blog post, and look forward to seeing you on the community podcast channel on the Packet Pushers.